Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
The motion passed 6-1 to adopt the statement to ask for Stringer's resignation, and I would say about 90% of the crowd gave us a standing ovation.
Given the current circumstance and the fact that these colleagues no longer want to work with him, that puts Legislative District 1 at a severe disadvantage.
We don't have any evidence that the Ducey Victory Committee knew that the true source of the Blue Magnolia contribution was, in fact, Larry Van Tuyl. Further investigation may reveal that the Ducey Victory Committee was aware that Larry Van Tuyl was the true source of Blue Magnolia's contribution.
By repealing that, that confirms the Clean Elections Commission's authority. So that's a really important thing out of this, because we believe that that's the answer to fighting dark money is using Clean Elections Commission.
And with us to talk about the continuing controversy swirling around State Representative David Stringer and a judge's ruling in a campaign finance case, among other issues, are Doug Cole, Chief Operating Officer with High Ground, and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Guys, welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
So I think we have to start with David Stringer. I'm not exactly sure where to start with this because there's so much going on. Doug, we saw earlier this year, the State House decided to kick out one of its members, Don Shooter. It does not appear as though there is any really momentum to do that again with David Stringer, although there are certainly calls for him to resign. What do you see as sort of the key differences between how the House handled Shooter and how the House appears to be handling Stringer?
Well, first of all, and good morning, Mark. First of all, Representative Don Shooter, the allegations against him involved actions. It involved employees and involved others that work at the state capitol that felt threatened, in an unsafe work environment in some cases. So that's the difference. The Stringer instance is he saying and articulating what he believes and his thoughts. So that's kind of the bright line. It's really hard to immediately call for someone's resignation or move to expel them because of their thoughts and their beliefs. It's when it moves into making others feel unsafe, feeling threatened, and feeling harmed. That's kind of the line. Now, the Senate Democrats yesterday, led by Charlene Fernandez. House Democrats, Charlene Fernandez and Dr. Freese from Tucson, have asked that the speaker move forward with a censure at this point. That's probably procedurally the most logical thing to do if there's going to be something else besides the stripping Representative Stringer of his three committees. He still sits on the government committee, and they also asked the House Speaker-elect to take him off the government committee.
Mm. So, Roy, do you think that asking for a vote of censure is the right move for House Democrats?
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with Doug in the sense that the comments that he made were clearly his thoughts, his views on the world. Unfortunately for all of us, I think those thoughts are racist thoughts. And in my view, people who have those racist thoughts have no business serving us in the state legislature. So I think a censure is the right move, whether they move forward with something like expulsion, whether this sort of rises to the level of disorderly behavior is something that they're going to have to determine, hopefully in a deliberative process. But this isn't new. I mean, he has made comments like this multiple times before, and clearly he has racist views of people of color.
You know, and he's also part owner of a publication up in Prescott called, I think it's called Prescott Now. It's an online, where now people are going back and looking at some of his writings and opinions there. But all this, as Roy accurately stated, all this has been out there, and the voters of Legislative District 1 elected him. His near the Democrat that ran in that district against him and Noel Campbell, she came 34,000 votes less than him. She only got 32,000 votes. So, you know, the voters of LD1, having fully known about some of his sayings, elected him. And that's kind of the real problem here, because the election just happened. And you can't recall. I mean, they could recall him, but he has to be sitting first in the new legislature.
Wait till January
which they seat January 14th, and they by the Constitution says you got to wait 5 days, you know, before. So that's another avenue that may happen. But you have the Prescott City Council. You have his own seatmate, who's the incoming Senate President, Karen Fann, asking for his resignation. You have the chairman of the Republican Party, Jonathan Lyons, asking for his resignation. You have the governor of the state of Arizona, Doug Ducey. I mean, the list goes on and on. And now it looks like the Yavapai County Bar Association is circulating a petition. So, you know, this could continue to snowball into something else. We'll just have to wait and see. You know, his comments and his thoughts are repugnant. They're repulsive. They're not only racist, but, you know, he's also being accused of being an anti-Semite. So, this is just, you know, and it's getting national attention, of course, because it's Arizona.
I wonder about the political implications of this then. So if he's in the session next time around and has no committee positions, is that just him being stubborn at that point, I guess? Like, what would he actually be able to accomplish?
Well, not much, right? I mean, I think it would be him being stubborn. I mean, this is not someone who, you know, we've seen the reaction by him, which has really been a non-reaction. This is not someone who's looking at resigning or anything like that or being shamed out of office. And so not knowing him well, but obviously knowing his views, at least some of them, I think that if he was removed from committees, I don't think, you know, I think he'd be perfectly happy just sitting there and holding his seat. I mean, Doug gets at, you know, a central problem here, right, which is that we knew about these comments or similar comments before. He stood for re-election, and he got re-elected, which to me—
Overwhelmingly,
which to me was one of the more disappointing outcomes of this election. I mean, I was on, an effort or was part of an effort to try to make sure he didn't get re-elected, and that was unsuccessful. I'm hoping then that if this doesn't result in some kind of expulsion and he does sit there, that we're coming back in 2 years, and the people in that area in Prescott decide that this is a bridge too far, and he is not re-elected.
Well, Doug, what do you think about that, though? Because as you said, you both articulated this. People in his district knew what he was about, knew what he thought, and voted for him anyway. So could one make the argument, maybe he would make the argument, that, look, this stuff is out there. People wanted me down at the Capitol, so quit calling on me to step down.
Well, the brief news clip that I saw yesterday that he did, that's basically what he said. I was just elected. People know me. This is my community. But his community is a Prescott City Council that took the very unusual step of voting publicly, demanding his resignation. That's his main base of power, is the city of Prescott.
Is there a threshold, though, I wonder? So, like, yes, there were comments that he had made in the past that had been out there, but I wonder, are we overestimating how much voters really knew about these kinds of things? Or is this just a name they recognized and voted again? Like, is there an argument to be made there at all?
I don't think so. I think this was, if you read the Prescott papers and watched, their news, their television news up there is Valley News, and this led for many days on almost every newscast. So I think that it was well known out there.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. I mean, I think a lot of people knew about it and voted for him anyways. Now, maybe we can make an argument that there were people out there that didn't come out and vote that, you know, are offended by his comments, and hopefully that will change. Ultimately, he doesn't deserve to sit in the legislature, in my view, because of these views. I mean, I know there's been an argument that he has the First Amendment right to say what his views are, and he absolutely does, but that doesn't protect him from the repercussions of what he says. And I hope that the repercussions are that he no longer serves in the legislature.
I think the most significant person asking for his resignation is Karen Fann, because Karen Fann is sat on the Prescott City Council. She was mayor of Chino Valley. Her family has very deep roots in that community with the Fann Construction Company, and she's the incoming Senate President. So I think that's, you know, if you look at any individual that has any impact up there, I think that that's the most significant development in this saga.
Well, we heard in our montage at the top of the segment here, we heard a clip from her saying that basically nobody's going to want to work with him. So to the point that we were discussing earlier about, like, what can he actually do? He's not on committees. Guessing he's probably not going to get a lot of co-sponsors for his bills. I'm guessing not a lot of legislators are going to ask for his signature on their bills. So what kind of disadvantage does that put maybe to that specific district in terms of his ability to get stuff done?
Well, the committee system in the state legislature is very powerful and very important, and that's where all the legwork is done. That's where the legislation gets fine-tuned. That's where people, that's where testimony is taken. That's where legislators can ask the public and can ask representatives or whatever the issue that that's in front of them. They can ask them questions, and that's where the give and take goes. By him being taken out of that process, he's a backbencher in the most direct sense of the word. But getting rid of his committee that was looking at criminal justice reform, that's a big deal.
Although the House Judiciary Committee has said it will pick up that mantle.
Correct. What's interesting, though, is that his views on those issues were kind of aligned more with center-left, those of the center-left. So it's an interesting paradox, but hopefully those efforts will continue because I think that's very, very much needed in our criminal code here in Arizona.
Roy, how important – let's assume that he is still in office or takes office in January with the rest of the legislature. What kind of impact does that have on the business that the legislature does and maybe what it's able or not able to do?
Well, I mean, he's still ultimately going to have a vote. I mean, he'll be a backbencher, but he'll have a vote and he'll have a say on legislation that comes before the floor. I think at the end of the day, if it looks as though Republicans aren't going to do the right thing and move forward with a censure or move forward with, you know, whatever kind of punishment that they want to do, then perhaps Democrats will say, well, you know, here's a representative who's saying things that are just terrible and you guys aren't doing anything about it. However, I'm sort of happy at this point that the initial reaction by some of the Republicans has been like, this is a real problem and we need to do something about it, including some people calling for his resignation. So I think that is helpful towards, you know, having the two sides work with each other in the session.
Doug, really quickly before we go to break, how much does incoming Speaker Rusty Bowers want not to go away, because as long as Stringer is there, it's not going to go away, but how much does he want to try to put this off to the side a bit so the business of the House can get done?
Well, all he has to do is look back at current Speaker J.D. Mesnard's term, where a good portion of his speakership the last 2 years was taken over by the Don Shooter saga. So and it really cripples you because you have your policy objectives that you want to take care of, but yet you have this sideshow. I mean, we'll call it a circus because it truly was. He moved very quickly in stripping him of his committee assignments and his chairmanships. He just doesn't want this instance to take over the operation of the House like it did for current Speaker J.D. Mesnard.
That's Doug Cole. Also with us is Roy Herrera. I'm Mark Brody with Lauren Gilger. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap. More after this short break. Good morning. You're listening to the show here on KJZZ 91.5 with Lauren Gilger in Phoenix. I'm Mark Brody. We are in the midst of the Friday Newscap, joined in studio by former congressional staffer Roy Herrera and Doug Cole, chief operating officer with High Ground. Guys, let's move on to a complaint that was filed this week about a fairly large contribution that was made to Governor Ducey's reelection campaign. The allegation basically saying that the person who made the contribution was trying to hide his identity by using another organization to make the contribution. Doug, how big of a deal is this? I mean, in the scope of campaign finance law, which is, you know, kind of complex.
I think this is just yet another chapter and another instance that as we continue to navigate post-Citizens United ruling and many other rulings, this $500,000 donation, but let's be very clear, the alleged complaint was not filed against the Ducey Victory Fund. It was filed against Blue Magnolia, which is the Delaware holding company that was funded by a car dealer, member of a car dealership family. It, you know, every time these things come up, it chips away at voter trust in the system. They just see, okay, big money again. Where'd it come from? Don't know. Okay, now we know. And it just continues on and on, and I don't see any end to it. I see the only people that really benefited is my good friend here, Roy, and his colleague Joe Canefield and Dennis Burke over at Ballard Spar and others that
keep the lawyers busy.
Yeah, it does. They're in high cotton. That's all this stuff does, and it erodes voter confidence in the system. which troubles me because you know, we need a transparent system. But all they see is big money, dark donors, and it just turns people off. It really does.
If this is successful, this complaint, what would the result be? Would anything happen? Would there be a fine? Would they have to give the money back in some way?
Well, these kinds of cases are very difficult to prove, right? I mean, as someone who does campaign finance law, you know, this is a great example of how convoluted the law is and how complicated it is. I mean, you know, are there scenarios where affiliated organizations with where money moves from one organization to another organization and then ultimately finds its way into a contribution? That happens every day in politics. Now, in this one, you know, the accusation is that it was truly a straw donor, so that an LLC was essentially created only for this purpose, right? So this one seems to be like a more egregious case, but I guess I would just sort of caution, seeing how these things go, that we'll actually see, you know, an actual conclusion to this that's going to result in some sort of damage, you know, or some sort of fine or some sort of punishment.
Yeah, and the only way this thing came out is because this interest group was looking at a donation made by Blue Magnolia to Congressman Martha McSally in her senatorial bid, and then they made the correction with the Federal Elections Commission, and then they noticed this other one, and they brought it to, because it, since this is a state election, brought it to the Secretary of State and maybe even the Attorney General of the state, because they're the ones that have the jurisdiction.
So because we can't get enough of talking about campaign finance and campaign finance law, let's talk about another ruling, a court ruling this week dealing with a state law that was passed a couple of years ago dealing with disclosure of campaign spending and the Clean Elections Commission. And Roy, I'll start with you as the campaign finance attorney in the group here. How significant do you find this ruling to be?
Well, first of all, I love that we're talking about campaign finance. it's a great conversation. But, you know, it's a significant ruling for sure. I mean, it restores some of the regulatory authority of the Clean Elections Commission, which was changed as a result of the campaign finance rewrite, I guess, 2 years ago at this point. And then it also overturned certain provisions of that rewrite, which I think you can argue hurts the other side, actually probably hurts Democrats. But ultimately, this ruling is going to be appealed. It's going to end up at the Supreme Court. You know, so I'm not exactly sure sort of how it's going to end up, but it is a significant ruling. It does change, you know, and restore some of the power to clean elections, which I think Republicans have generally tried to get rid of.
But there was also a proposition on the ballot that was approved by voters, right, that kind of chipped away at the power of clean elections. How does that sort of balance out? Is this just one hit from one side and a gain on the other?
I think that's right. I mean, also, I think, you know, I would sort of question whether voters or how voters understood that initiative this time around, right? Because I think that, you know, there was provisions in that sounded good as far as helping clean elections, but then provisions that in reality actually ended up hurting clean elections.
Remember in 2016 when Senate Bill 14, was it 15, 16 or whatever it was, when that was passed, that was the brainchild of Secretary of State Michelle Reagan and her elections director, Eric Spencer. And it was very controversial, extremely controversial. It went through on solid party line votes. And a lot of people felt at the time that there were legal problems, that they were circumventing the Voter Protection Act by backdooring changes to the Clean Elections Act. But both those acts were passed in 1998. So, you know, I'm not surprised by this ruling, but I agree with Roy. We're going to go to the appellate court and then on to the Supreme Court. So this one's not over.
So I want to also get your guys' take on the memorial services, the passing of former President George H.W. Bush. He was buried yesterday in College Station, Texas. Of course, on today, Roy, your former boss, Ed Pastore, is being laid to rest as well. Doug, did you come into contact with President Bush? Did you have dealings with him in your time in state government?
I did. I did when I was deputy chief of staff for Governor Symington for both of his terms. When he was first elected in 1991, of course, George H.W. Bush was in the White House, and I was fortunate enough to visit him in the Oval Office and in the White House with Governor Symington. Just a wonderful, wonderful man. And I think the funeral services that we saw earlier this week brought a real contrast to where we are today politically and to where we have been. And it was a stark contrast. But what a beautiful service. It brought, you know, just back in August, we were back in the National Cathedral with my former boss, John McCain. And now today with the great statesman for Arizona, Ed Pastor, you know, it's just sad. We're seeing these great statesmen pass, and you know, pages are being turned. And I'm not liking the new chapter in many cases that we're living in right now.
Yeah.
I want to go back to chapter one.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. You know, it's sad, personally sad for me, and I think sad for the country, because these were great leaders. I think seeing the ceremonies, you know, having these individuals lie in state in their capitals, I think reminded me a lot of the things that unite us as a country and the things that make this country great, which is in total contrast with some of the rhetoric we see from the president every day, and sort of how broken I think the system has gotten when it comes to partisanship. I mean, these all three, I think, were individuals who respected the other side, who even if they disagreed with the other side, they still understood that, you know, they needed to work with them. And I can tell you, working for Ed, that's you know, how he operated. I mean, he got things done, but ultimately he was respected by everyone because he respected everyone.
All right, I think we're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately. That's former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Also with us, Doug Cole, chief operating officer with High Ground. Guys, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having us. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.